Okay, ready?
Everybody
settle and action.
Warning, Critique Revolve contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended,
you're one ugly motherfucker. Go ahead. Make my day.
Well, that's great. That's just fucking great, man.
You rub the clothes on the skin, it doesn't even have
any control. Most of the night. Most of the night.
Wow!
There are
several
rules. Short round. Somebody. Very smart.
Boy, no country
I've ever
heard of.
English,
motherfucker, do you speak it?
They couldn't stop the
show. Moving home, actually, to New York, you.
Nice knowing you, Clarice. Say goodbye to Melvin for me. Oh. We had such a wonderful time the other night. He's very strong.
You're so full of shit, Eleanor.
Yeah?
I saw her the other day.
Blonde?
Rebecca?
Yeah. Suddenly she became blonde.
Hello, welcome everyone to Critique Revolve, Rayman Digital's exclusive film and media podcast. Today, we're going to be discussing Scarlett Johansson's directorial debut titled Eleanor the Great, which is a 2025 American drama film starring June Squibb, who is definitely on the rise in her later years.
Yes.
Aaron Kellyman, Jessica Hesch, and Chiwetel Ejiofor. Hopefully I said his name correct. The film had its world premiere at the Certain Regard section of the Cannes Film Festival on May 20th, 2025. It is scheduled to be released September 26th by Sony Pictures Classics in North America and TriStar Pictures internationally. One way to frame this movie, in Eleanor the Great, Scarlett Johansson's directorial debut, grief and reinvention unfold alongside questions of faith, memory, and belonging. Johansson's filmmaking seems to echo the sensibilities of the early directors who shaped her career, the cosmopolitan intimacy of Sofia Coppola or even Woody Allen, drawing on the tradition of smaller indie-leaning art films is probably the best way to categorize this. And the result is a compassionate but uneven first feature. One that I would even say leans on Johansson's longstanding affinity for this mode of picture while also searching for her own directorial voice. David, what were your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts of this film was... I was very excited to see this film from the get-go because, number one, it's a directorial debut of a major name, Scarlett Johansson. So it's always great to see, quote-unquote, new directors because the one thing that me and you have discussed on many of our shows in the past is, like, we need an influx of new voices in the field of directing, in the field of filmmaking. And it's very easy nowadays... for new directors to get lost in the shuffle in this world that we live in with the amount of content that's out there. So you have to make your art that much more impressionable. And I was really interested to see what Scarlett Johansson was going to do. And I was really surprised as I was watching it that, like what you mentioned, there's a lot of like her own history, like her own background of her early days. If you're going in this expecting Scarlett Johansson when after she's made the big name, like she's in Jurassic Park, she's in all the Disney films, she's in the Marvel films and all that, you're going to be surprised because this is not that Scarlett Johansson. This is the Scarlett Johansson that started out in film and like the Woody Allen films, the Sofia Coppola films, a very more intimate and personal filmmaker, which was very refreshing to me, honestly, as like a person looking at this. And one of the reasons why I love looking at films like this with you is like my film brain goes into effect. It's no longer focusing on the superficial things that mass audiences want to actually focus on. We're really diving into film, what it means in the art, you know, the art space of it all. And when I was watching Eleanor the Great, I'm like going, uneven is a good way to put it, but I think that for me, this film was very safe for her. This was like her wading into the pool. And now she's in the pool. She's about waist deep in the pool. And now it's about her swimming to the deep end. She needs to actually get her voice heard.
So take more risks in her next film.
Yeah. And that was the big thing that I would take away if I was looking at this and talking about it with other filmmakers is like, this is an example of like cool start because you did something easy to get your name out there. You did something to wade yourself into the art form that is film. Now you have to discern your voice from everybody else in the pool. That's much harder.
Yeah.
So
maybe David, I think you're onto something here. I don't know if I would say this movie is 100% safe. I feel like she wanted to do something risky because we are, whether people want to accept it or not, we are in an era currently where being Jewish isn't great.
This is true.
The Jewish communities are now facing many of the same things they have faced for seemingly just since the dawn of time. They're the universe's butthole, it seems like. They're just, I'm not saying that's what I believe. I'm saying that's how the universe seemingly treats them. They're constantly.
They're their whipping boy.
Yes. So I don't know if I would ever say fully that when you're dealing with Jewish faith and generational trauma, it's a safe territory. But I will say, David, you are probably correct in that she took a safe approach to the content itself.
Yeah, because like at the end of the day, while the content might be really open for interpretation and it is a gamble, but her delivery system was basically she fell back onto, I feel, what's comfortable for her.
Yes, for sure.
The voice that she's been seeing, the Woody Allens and the Sofia Coppolas that basically kind of forged her. And that's cool. I mean, hey, everyone does that. Everyone does that as a director. I look at directors that influence me and yes, some of their work bleeds into what I do.
Yeah. Well, influences, right?
Yeah. It's all about influences. But the problem that I see with Eleanor the Great was with ScarJo's first attempt is like, what are you trying to say? Not like what are your influences trying to say, but like,
there you go.
What are you trying to say?
I agree with you, David, because that is probably the weakness overall of the film is the question. What are you actually attempting to say? And normally I don't have problems with trying to pin that down. We don't have problems in trying to pin that down. And I could say that this movie is about generational trauma. It could be about relaying historical memory. So trauma is not forgotten, but remembered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, family members who were lost in horrific tragedies, clinging to that memory, allowing them to live on through memory, through storytelling, through folk stories. Jewish culture is largely built on storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're saying? Or are you talking about the process of aging and loss and the transition of going from loss to identity crisis, to ethnic identity crisis? What exactly is the movie saying? And ultimately, David, I think you're right. That's where the movie does lose me because I think it's trying to say too much.
And here's an example that I pointed out that I actually wrote in my notes breaking down this film. Eleanor the Great kind of has the genetics or the DNA of, say, like, as we said, ScarJo is influenced by past filmmakers she's worked with, like a Woody Allen.
Her early career.
Early career. You look at, like, say, Annie Hall from Woody Allen.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at, like, how Eleanor the Great is actually kind of established. You can see the bones of what, like, ScarJo pulled from Woody Allen. Especially when you look at Annie Hall. Because Annie Hall is, like, a very personal, almost Jewish type of storytelling, right? But the difference is, when I watched Annie Hall, which was Woody Allen's one of his first films, his voice comes out clear as day. Because he knows what he's trying to say. He focuses.
He's a master.
Yeah, he knows what his story has to say at the end of the day. Eleanor the Great kind of gets there. You kind of see her get into a gear as a director. She's like, by the middle of the film, I'm going, okay, she's heading this way. But when you get to the end, it's almost like suddenly she came up with too many ideas. Like, oh, I could say this. Oh, I could say this with my message. I'll say it all. And it's like, no.
David, I feel like we could possibly streamline, I don't want to say the symptomatic meaning, but just the simplistic meaning of the movie is probably more or less can be said to be about loss and identity crisis. In late age.
Yeah.
Okay. That's probably superficially what you can say. The veneer of the narrative, that's probably what they're saying. And probably what most people would point to. But when you start digging deeper, there are a lot of things, especially when you look at some of the biblical allegory that they included into the movie. There's obviously a point to reframe, or at least perhaps maybe this is a bit of a identity exercise for Scarlett Johansson herself. Trying to possibly reconnect with her ethnicity and her religious background, whatever it may be, and these weaknesses that are there. Ultimately, I do feel like the movie is charming.
It is.
It's a feel-good movie. I do feel like it does its job in entertaining people if you're into these types of films. June Squibb is...
She is awesome.
I just love her. I love that she has gotten famous like this at such a...
late stage in her life.
Yes. I love it, Dave. I love success stories, and I love late success stories. I find them endearing and incredibly inspirational. So to see her have these successes and the films that she's been doing of late, going to the film festival circuit, for the most part, going over well within those film festival circuits. So she was great in the movie. Now, just so that it's more clear, David, I'm going to read the synopsis so that people can get a more clear idea of the plot of the film. So after 70 years with best friend, Eleanor moves to New York City for a fresh start. Making new friends at 90 proves difficult. Longing for connection, she befriends a 19-year-old student. Now, the additional aspects to that synopsis that I would say is vital to add so that people can understand is that after her friend passes, her friend was a Holocaust survivor, and she accidentally is nudged into presuming her dead friend's identity,
as
a Holocaust survivor. And there are some people who are reading this, some reviews I've read where people are talking about how there are no redeeming qualities to this movie because what she did is wrong, but they're not understanding the movie itself, and they're not understanding her character motivation. It wasn't about her own need for acceptance to steal someone's identity. She was doing it to help another individual. And that was the biblical message that maybe, and this is why some people have problems with that, because we're in an era where there is no critical thought or philosophical nuance. Because ultimately, the movie was posing this idea of deceit as actually potentially being something of virtue.
Yes.
With the proper intentions. And they even used the story of, was it Esau and Jacob? Because it was the story of the twins who, I believe, Esau gave up his birthright. Jacob presumed to take over or assumed to take over that birthright. It's an interesting connection, but this is where some of those issues I was talking about, David, that what exactly are you trying to say? Are you trying to condone this? Is your intention literally to condone deceit if there's a virtuous agenda connected? Is that your point? Because they did bring that story to the forefront. Now, was that simply there to connect Judaism more at the forefront of the movie? I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. But ultimately, the movie is a very heart-touching film that reminds us of what we lose and what we can hold on to despite loss.
Yeah, it's at the end of the day, it's almost a grief story about someone coming to terms with the loss of someone very close to them.
And what comes after that with that loss when you're forced to change, right? And having to change your entire outlook and the way you live.
And the effect of memory, too.
Yes.
Because, like, in a way, Eleanor ends up changing, even though she's old at that point. And that's one of the key components of the story, too, I feel, is, like, age does not care, does not matter when it comes to
anything.
When it comes to your
mind and what you want, your desires, your wishes, your hopes and dreams, that doesn't change.
That doesn't change. And everything that, all your actions still matter.
All your actions matter. And then by default, what does that mean? You still matter.
And
the things you want still matter, even if it seemingly doesn't matter to anyone else around you because you're simply an old person.
Exactly. And that's why one of the things I loved about the movie too is the dynamic between Eleanor and then I don't have the character's name in front of me, but the student that she befriends.
Yeah,
that dynamic that dynamic actually pushes that narrative forward, where it's kind of like what Eleanor did is wrong, but at the end of the day, it's a wrongdoing that actually is seen in a positive light.
Yeah, it might have been ethically wrong what she did, but the reasons why she did it came from a good place. She wasn't doing it for reasons that aided and helped her. She was nudged into it, and she was trying to help a young girl that was also going through some severe loss.
And, like, in a lot of ways, the film, to me, is saying morals override ethics. And it's okay sometimes when morals override your ethics, because your ethical beliefs, what she did was ethically wrong. Morally, though, it at the end of the day, this is what she felt was the right thing to do. And when you look at that, I can understand why a lot of people... I've seen a couple of reviews actually from Jewish websites that are very, very harsh on this movie. I completely understand. But just like what you said earlier, they're looking at it as a skewed lens, focusing on simply that sole part of the film instead of looking at the film as a total and actually realizing that film is an art. It's an art form. You cannot actually just connect one single thing to someone's art because they're influenced by many other things and they're trying to say some other things. It's up to the artist, at this point, the director, like ScarJo, to kind of narrow down what she's truly saying. And I think that that's why there's a lot of, I'm not going to say like negativity towards the film, because I've noticed that the film is actually kind of like in the midpoint. And I think that basically that people are having their issues with this film because Scarlett Johansson wasn't succinct enough to tell this is what my story is truly about. Because just like what you said, we're up to interpretation. A lot of people are interpreting their own way of their films and using assumptions.
Yeah, and I don't have a... Now, if this was a non-Jewish director, I would probably say, well, you know what? Jewish communities and others may have a valid room to complain. Not because I don't think non-Jewish people should do Jewish movies. I'm not against. I hate that when people say, "Oh, well, you're not black, so
you can't direct a
black movie."
Yes.
And I think that's ridiculous. I think people have skill sets that either will serve a movie or TV show, or they won't.
Yes.
Scarlett Johansson is a Jewish director who's telling a movie about Jewish people, and people are imperfect. People make mistakes. People are humans. And mm-hmm. if these people happen to be Jewish people, it doesn't change anything. She's writing about what she's comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not trying to idealize Judaism or idealize the faith or even idealize individual Jewish ideas on theology or their spirituality. This is simply a cosmopolitan story dealing with a group of people who are ethnically Jewish.
Yes.
So when people misinterpret certain things and get mad about things, I'm like, well, these are people. This is a realistic look into people's actions and the very real things people go through day in, day out, especially as you're getting older. You know, I don't feel like she's done anything offensive because I did read some things. Some Jewish people are just upset with how it
yes,
was.
Yes.
But I'm like, well, you know, Scar Jo can't get away from controversy, seemingly. It just, this is why she's not on social media. She has said these things that she's just burnt out on people getting mad about everything. And she is a target. She's been a target since, I want to say, Ghost in the Shell came out.
Yes.
Which also is stupid because all these people were like, white people were offended. Radical white people were offended that she would play a role that they believed should have been cast with an Asian individual. But by even saying that shows me they don't even understand Ghost in the Shell, because the shell itself doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's the essence of the person. Yeah. Like, they don't understand what the property is even about. And it was also funny because when they interviewed people in Japan about her role, they were like, wait, there's controversy about this? So the Japanese people themselves were like, this is a fun movie. The only people complaining were American.
We're Americans.
American white people.
And that's the funnier part, is kind of like.
But that's how it always is.
It's always been like that, especially around.
How many times, David, have we said whitey? Like, we appreciate your enthusiasm, but please quit fighting our battles. We got it.
If we're not offended, then guess what? You don't have to be offended.
Yeah, we got this.
Don't fight my battle.
It's true, though. It's so patronizing.
I'm not going to sleep with you.
Yeah. It's incredibly patronizing. So, David, we were talking about the many ideas that we're seemingly put in this film.
Mm-hmm.
There are surprisingly a lot of ideas. The major thematic thread could possibly be posited as simply dealing with loss and transition, like I said a few moments ago. But even more so, it places an importance on, say, I think being true to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And also the reliance on family and friends, which is a very positive message. But now if you put all of it together, here's how I see the film's larger project and what it wants to do and where its limits are. So I'm going to go through 4 points that I isolated and tell me if you picked up on this or if you disagree, agree. So the film is a meditation on how we cope with loss, not just the loss of people, but the loss of stories, histories, identity, and what we do when those stories are at risk of becoming silent. Second, it is also about belonging. Eleanor feels increasingly unmoored after Bessie dies. She's in a new place with family who are caring, but also separated by generational gaps. She wants to belong to a community, to a faith, to a legacy. Number three, there is a spiritual dimension. Faith here is more than ritual. It's memory, responsibility, community, compassion. Eleanor's Judaism is not just inherited by marriage, but something she has to live into through her actions, including uncomfortable ones. Number four, but there is also an ethical test. At one point, does love or grief not justify misrepresentation? So yes, presumably Eleanor feels she is honoring Bessie, her friend, but what about respect for truth, for survivors who carry those scars, for the significance of the Holocaust in Jewish identity and history? And the film asks this question, though by most accounts, doesn't fully punish Eleanor. Instead, it seems to lean toward compassion. Those are four elements that I picked. And that's why I say the movie has too much going on.
Yes.
Even though the movie is, it's really interesting. All of the camera work, the craft itself, you would think depicts a movie that is more streamlined and in control of itself, in control of the narrative, just by the nature of how it's filmed. But then when you dig into the narrative itself, you start to see there's a lot of different themes there. And it starts to feel a little ADD. You're trying to pinpoint what exactly the movie's about. And ultimately, David, I do think that's the issue with this movie. The movie was trying to do too many things.
Absolutely. One other thing I would point out too is like the story of Eleanor and Nina also is something about the difference of generational gap, because you have
like in views, generational views,
because you have the character of Nina searching out Eleanor and actually wanting to know about, you know, that history that that generation has never been part of.
Yeah.
And like
something that her mother was a part of, wanting to like get closer to it, understand it more.
That also is there with that generational gap, where it's like we live in a world where the generation of today does not know about like boomer culture and
boomer culture. And is that what we're calling it?
Yeah.
Boomer culture.
But that's what I've heard. That's what I've heard them refer to as, because like,
I'm good with that.
Because like none of the generation today looks at like, say, that culture and can fathom some of the things that happen. So what do? They try to seek us out. They try to actually ask, why did we do this? Or what is this about? Because they cannot fathom or understand what that was like. And you brought up four. I just gave you a fifth one. And and that right there, basically, there's other things too. I mean, how does Nina's father fit into all this? Because like, there's so many elements that Scarlett Johansson tried to handle that I feel for a first time director, that's a lot of balls to be juggling.
And
that sounds terrible. that's terrible.
Juggling like a circus seal.
But like when you're in filmmaking, one of the things that I've always been taught back in our day in film school is the less balls you got to juggle in your story, the easier it is to get your voice out. And here, I mean, me and you just brought up five, and right now I'm even thinking there could be a sixth.
There's more. I left some out.
And I'm like going, that's way too many things to be juggling in a story for a first time director.
Yeah. Okay. But how about this? Let's look at the other side of this. So we have all these characters, and this is quite the skill. And this is where I do applaud Johansson in bringing things together. I never once felt like anyone's stories conflicted. So even though we had all these potential themes, right, mm-hmm. that are colliding, massive collisions everywhere, but despite that, every single one of our characters, our main characters, even the father, all fit within that collision. You get what I'm saying?
No,
they're all
absolutely
dealing with loss and the ability to transcend that loss. And of course, the transitional period between loss and then finding something new.
And I think that that comes from Scarlett Johansson's strength as an actor. Because one of the things that I feel actors bring to the table is like a passion and a knowledge of how important a character can be, whether it's a main character or down to basically a background character. And as an actor, I know that actors can actually bring that type of importance and passion into a story. And I think that's where, just like what you were saying, is like, that's one of the strengths that you, when you take a step back, okay, that could be a strength of Scarlett Johansson's directorial style in the future, where she could be kind of like You don't like how Tarantino can juggle thousands of characters in his story, where it's like he can have multiple characters and all of them could have like fully fleshed backgrounds and never get lost in his stories. I think that she can do that. But the question becomes is kind of like, I feel it comes down to she needs to actually take a little bit more risk and take a little bit more reins in what the characters amount to her story.
Yeah.
To her story, not the script, but basically what her vision is. Because just like you said, when you take a look at the story, she does the story is fine. The story is quite adequate. You don't get lost in anything. Everything flows quite nicely into each other.
Yeah, it's a cute story.
Mm-hmm.
It's charming. It does what it sought out to do. It's, you know, designed to humanize individuals, right? The other thing is that these are groups of people who normally don't intersect. That was the other interesting thing.
And that's why I say
there's also, well, possibly, but that's why I was calling this movie cosmopolitan, because you're dealing with a lot of different ethnic groups all coming together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's an interesting film. I don't think I have discussed or reviewed a movie like this in quite some time. Something that has obvious flaws, but despite those flaws, I enjoyed the movie immensely. If you're just going to see a movie and you want a good feel type of movie, you don't want to go get depressed, you know, or you don't want to see a rom-com, but you just want to see just something to pass the time with a date or to check out for a little bit. I think this is a very human story.
Yeah.
And I will say that's why I enjoyed this movie as well, because we have lost the human element in so much cinema today. We have disregarded the human element for political, for ideology. And we have forgot that the political and the ideological don't matter without the human.
Yes.
And I do appreciate that this movie brought the human element to the forefront more than anything, more than politics, more than Johansson's view on her own ethnicity. Ultimately, it's just a movie about humanity, about humans.
It's a slice of life. It's like those type of films where it's kind of like you don't have to have any political leaning to kind of understand or basically connect with the characters.
Well, who in our entire life can... I think everyone, let me say this better. I don't think there's anyone out there who could not relate in some way to something in this movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll take it a step further. Is kind of like, if you can't at least connect with Eleanor on the grief level, you either haven't gone through that grief yet of losing someone.
Yeah.
Or you probably need to actually question yourself where it's kind of like you need
do some soul searching,
please. Because if you just want to just take a look at the story of Eleanor and her motivations, it's a very human choice to do it. It's flawed, but it's also very understandable why she does it.
Yeah. Now, David, we do not want to forget that there is a stigma that is attached oftentimes to actors who cross over to directing.
Yes, there is.
Many times critics and film academics share similar feelings about actors who decide to try their hand at directing.
Yes.
And even when you have created a large body of work, oftentimes critics and academics still refer to the individual, whoever it may be, as an actor. George Clooney is a perfect example. The guy has directed several films, and yet when you think of film directors, his name never comes up.
Absolutely never.
People refer to him as an actor. So that's already one point against any actor who's attempting to direct a film. And I would largely agree There are a lot of actors who are simply looking for a new vehicle or a way to brand themselves. And they're not really directors. They're not great at it. They're using their own. I'm going to use the word privilege. I hate using that word, but I guess if you're working in Hollywood, there is a level of privilege there, right? As an actor.
Yeah.
You have the ability to do things that others couldn't. So for example, David, if I were to go sell a script right now and Johansson was selling a script and they only wanted one and they were similar,
who would they go with? Exactly. Yeah.
So that's my point when I say privilege. So there's a lot of people who look suspiciously or even cynical when a director directs. Was this a deal you made on the back end? Oh, you do this movie for us and then you get to direct. Well,
Think about I could say I'm a director right now, but like Ben Affleck.
Yeah. He's one of the few who've crossed over.
He's one of the ones that crossed over and he's done some serious pieces that normally mainstream audiences would go, he directed that? Are you kidding me? No, it's Ben Affleck from Mallrats and
look at Robert Redford. I mean, yeah. Robert Redford was a director. No one remembers him as a director. They remember him as a writer. There's only a few that come to my mind. It's Ben Affleck and Clint Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood, Ron Howard.
Ron
Howard basically started off as an actor.
But see, you're right. But I would argue that he was never really an actor. He'd made a choice.
Yeah.
Decades ago.
Oh no, absolutely.
And like, I'm a director.
He may have started in acting, but at one point he basically said, no, I'm done with acting. I'm just going to go straight to directing.
The things he does now is more for friends, Arrested Development was just, that was his own show. Yeah. He was producing it with, Brian Grazer?
Mm-hmm. But say for example, like Clint Eastwood, he can go back and forth.
Yes. More or less what I'm thinking about here is people who go back and forth who are still actors and they're also directing films. Ben Affleck, Clint Eastwood. I can't really think of any others at the top of my head. I'm sure there are dozens more. But my point is that also might be a bit of a hill that Johansson is going to have to go over. She's going to take some shots because first off, social media doesn't like her right now. And also, she's now an actor, trying her hand at directing. And I will say that this film did not have those usual mistakes that the vanity projects have, where the actor's trying to be a director. I call them vanity projects. I didn't see those usual issues, those usual superficial mistakes, things that are more about themselves. And I also think it's a good idea for Johansson to completely remove herself as an actor for this movie. Because it would have gone over, I think, not very well if she was also starring in the movie.
Yeah. And I think that in itself made me, when you first brought this movie up to me, as sad as it sounds, that was one of the criteria I was like thinking to myself is like, okay, ScarJo's in it or she's directing in it. She's not going to pull off of Alfred Hitchcock and basically try to put herself into her own film.
Yeah.
And, Alfred. Because that's that's what Tarantino and Hitchcock always did.
Well, I don't think she's that type of director.
Yeah. Where they basically just make a cameo. Hey, how's it going? Just walk off scene.
Yeah.
But like that was one of the things that I took away was like, after I finished Eleanor the Grand, I'm going, no, this was a serious take for a person who wants to break into directing. It wasn't like a one-time fancy thing. It's not like, the people in today's Hollywood that I think about that try to break out of the acting bug and try to go into different fields and departments in the field are people like Ryan Reynolds and Dwayne Johnson who basically just want to be everywhere. But this was actually a serious take from a filmmaker like Scarlett Johansson. Made an honest attempt to try to put out her own film and tried to actually make her directorial debut. Didn't try to use her own name to actually carry it. It felt like it was solely a story she tried to focus on.
Yeah. In fact, the largest name on the poster is June Squibb. Scarlett Johansson and her marketing team behind this film, but whoever the studio used, didn't even attempt to try to position this as a movie directed by Scarlett Johansson. They use June Swib.
Yeah.
That's the largest name on the one sheet. So there was a concerted effort. I believe, obviously, studios understand this stigma when it comes to actors attempting to direct. So it seems like they were trying to pull back from anything that can be remotely used as a type of criticism towards Johansson. You know, ultimately, David, I said ultimately now five times, but now this is the last time I'll say. Ultimately, I enjoyed the movie. I do feel like it's an enjoyable film to watch. It is low key.
Yes,
it is. It's cut from the same cloth as Johansson's early film career. And that's a good thing, in my opinion. We have plenty of ADD action movie crime film epics, whereas this is bringing it down and reminding us that movies also, the screen can also be used to explore very real human issues in an entertaining and feel good way.
Yeah.
So I give this movie a 68% is what I'll give the movie. David?
I'm about a little higher than you because I think that the movie itself was midline. So for me, for midlines around the 70s. So at the end of the day, I gave this movie a 72 because it is a movie that you can sit through and actually watch. And once you actually sit down as a, I guess you could say a film snob and an actual true film critic, you can pick stuff out and have fun with this film. And that's one of the things that I really do enjoy is seeing directorial debuts a lot. I love actually seeing people's directorial debuts because film at the end of the day is an art form. And I'm always fascinated with how other artists interpret the world. And that's why I said, I really focus my quote unquote one negative is the fact that I never really got a sense of what her voice was really trying to say, but all of the ingredients that she had, she did well with it. She had a really great, she had a good cast around her. I mean, we haven't even talked about supporting cast besides the main actor. I really liked Erin Kellerman, who she's a bit of a familiar name, especially if you actually been watching the current, you know, Disney streaming era where she's been in Solo, she's been in Falcon and Winter Soldier, and she does a really good job. She's a good up-and-coming young actor, and that's the one thing I really took away from with the casting choices of this. For a directorial debut, they gave Scarlett Johansson a decent cast that can surround her and kind of make sure that she had a good cast that can follow her lead. And that in itself goes into like what me and you mentioned earlier. The film is a very safe project for a beginning director. And I think that's where it accomplished. Now the question becomes for me is like, all right, Scarlett Johansson, what are you going to do next? And are you going to break the mold like what we mentioned of other actors who have tried to actually break into directing? Because it's very easy to get lost in the pool. You have to make yourself now, what's the next project you're going to do? Because you just can't fall back and say, oh, I'm stuck. I did my one film.
Yeah. Well, that is something I am curious to see. Something you said a few moments ago about not really seeing a true style from ScarJo.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like we need to have more
to really judge
in order to see patterns emerge. But who knows? Maybe she will become the next big thing. We do know that actors typically have a very short shelf life.
Yeah.
I believe George Clooney said that when he moved into directing. He said actors typically are around for 5 to 7 years if they're lucky. And then after that, it becomes harder and harder to get into movies. Now, streaming and the rise of of streaming content has definitely changed that to a degree, but largely it still is true. Give me names of actors that have been around for more than 10 years that are still working.
They're still working.
It's very few. Mm-hmm. It's a very short list. So this could be Scarlett Johansson's attempt to increase her Hollywood longevity, knowing that not only is she an actor who has been luckily working for over 15 years, but also, unfortunately, she is a woman in Hollywood, and that doesn't always go over well as a woman ages. We all know that.
Exactly.
So maybe this is her attempt to save her career in some way, because she already sees the writing on the wall that maybe she's not getting the roles that she wants because there are new, younger, fresher faces.
Well, I mean, look at the story of what's the actor's name? Jodie Foster.
Yeah.
Jodie Foster actually went that route, and she did it successfully.
Yeah. I like Jodie Foster, but she's a talent.
Oh yeah.
She's a true, Jodie Foster's amazing.
She has a brilliant mind when it comes to film.
Yeah. All right. Well, this brings us to the end. David, thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, very nice to meet you. I'd like to know about sex change operation.
I see.
Cut. No good for sound.
Well, fucking hell, Lloyd.
Man, game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we going to do now? What are we going to do?
Where we're going, we don't need roads.
I'll be back.